We're on record. This is the November 28, 1988 meeting of the Alaska Code Revision Commission. It's now 11 minutes before the hour of 10. We have present with us today Commissioners Wilson Condon, Peter B. Frelick, Mary Hughes, Judge Thomas Stewart, and John Abbott. The record should reflect that we have a quorum present. Absent are Senator Rick Halford, Senator Rick Halford, Representative John Sun, and Dick Madsen. We also have with us today Mike Ford from Legislative Affairs Agency Legal Division, acting as our secretary, scribe, and whatever.
Moving pin.
Chairman, this is a matter of interest. Dick Madsen simply unable to make the date. The reason for his absence?
I had no reason to believe that he had a problem with this particular date, so I don't know why they didn't show up. I assume he was sent the notice as everybody else. No. And I didn't get a call from him, so I have no information on what happened with Dick. He may still show up today. Has everybody had an opportunity to read the minutes of the October 14, 1988 meeting that Teresa Bannister prepared?
Move for adoption.
Any objection? No. Hearing none, the minutes are adopted as drafted. I would state parenthetically for the record that these are wonderful minutes. We can read this and have a pretty good idea of what we did the last time. Because of scheduling of some of the commission members, Will Condon has indicated that he can be with us here part of the day. Peter Frelick is going to be with us part of the day. What I thought I'd do was just take any items on the agenda that the commissioners wanted to hear before they have to depart or move into the afternoon or whatever. So,
Peter, when do you?
This afternoon I can't come back.
I'm going to stay here this morning then, so I'll move my schedule around. I need to spend a couple of hours during the time when I can get on the phone to the East Coast, so that if I leave at noon and stay till 2, that'll be okay. I'll be able to catch people.
Point of inquiry, are we going to do anything with occupational licensing? Is there any report from the agency or otherwise?
No. As a matter of fact, it didn't even occur to me to check with Randall before this meeting because I was thinking of the corporations and code enforcement.
Do we know if he's gotten somebody to attend these meetings? Or?
Well, I guess he hasn't. I haven't talked to him about the hawk licensing project since the last meeting.
Okay.
If I read the minutes correctly, the Legislative Affairs Agency staff was going to deal with at least the technical amendments, and they weren't going to need to hire an attorney to do what Randall wanted to do. Is that right?
Well, we talked generally about getting somebody to do that technical work, but we still have to get the policy input from Randall's department, and I think as I indicated at the last meeting, I had spoken to Randall prior to that meeting, and he'd indicated that he'd not had a chance to review any of the bill, did not anticipate in the near future having an opportunity to do so.
Well, in that event, it seems to me that we should remove it from the agenda for this meeting, and place it on the agenda for the next meeting.
Okay. Any objection to that?
No.
Mr. Chairman, it seems to me then we need to make a decision about priorities while the quorum is present. I would think that the first priority would be for the status on the Corporations Code. And maybe the second priority what we're going to undertake on Title II.
Okay.
And then the third priority action on the security interests. That would be my individual impression of the priorities that we ought to address while these two members are here.
Okay, any objections to that?
No, I certainly agree with that.
I'll give you a status report on the task force. The task force that was created at the last meeting of the Code Division Commission met on November 16th of this year for the purpose of going over proposed changes. You'll recall that the task force was to be chaired by Willis Kirkpatrick with a representative from the Code Commission, myself, the State Chamber of Commerce represented by J.P. Tangen from Juneau, the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, represented by Ray Gardner. Liz Johnson did not appear, and nobody's ever been able to get in touch with her, and she's not responded to any letters, so at this point in time, we don't know what her status is. Both myself and another person that I talked to have tried to contact Liz Johnstone and didn't have any luck contacting her through the Bering Straits Corporation.
Where are their offices?
I'm sorry.
Where are their offices?
I don't.
Anybody know?
I think Bering Straits is in the InSearch building, but don't quote me. It's on 550 West 7th.
But they are in Anchorage, though.
Yes. So Liz's whereabouts are presently unknown.
Do you know whether or not she had any awareness of it?
No, we just know that myself and other persons had to contact her without any luck. Dave Wolf appeared on behalf of the Village Corporations. He was appointed or hired by the AFN to represent the interests of the Village Corporations. Prior to the November 16th meeting of the task force, which ran all day on the 16th, the business law section of the Alaska Bar Association met to consider changes. Eric Leroy is the chair of that. He also attended the task force meeting representing the business law section. The meeting lasted a couple of hours. Nothing really productive came out of the meeting. There was some discussion. Eric asked for suggestions or recommendations or input from people, the other members. There were probably about 15 people there concerning the ACC. And got no recommendations at all. You know, people were there just to listen. So he started to go through some of his laundry list of changes that he thought ought to be made, and there was some discussion of them. I think probably for the most part, the other people there either hadn't read the bill, or if they had, didn't feel that the changes that he was concerned about should be made. I guess the bottom line was it just really a recitation on his part of the work product that he's prepared. I get the impression that he's done most of the work, if not all of the work himself, on this thing with not too much input from other people. During the task force meeting, there were a number of changes that were proposed. The meeting kind of got bogged down because we got into a lot of discussion similar to what the Code Commission gets into when it's considering specific language in the bill. Some of the changes were small, innocuous changes. Others raised some fairly large issues that haven't been resolved yet. We made an attempt to hold another meeting prior to the meeting of the Commission today to see if we could do that, but virtually everybody, with the exception of myself, was going to be unavailable. They were talking about sending in designees to do the work, and I spoke with Willis, and he pretty much agreed that he probably wouldn't get very far with designees setting in trying to make policy decisions on this. So we've scheduled the next meeting for December the 8th, and that will be here in Anchorage. And that'll be a meeting that will be attended by everybody. Willis is going to send out a memo memorializing the changes that were voted on by the task force the last time, and advising them to prioritize the things that they wanted changed, because a lot of the stuff is, as I say, is small stuff, and there was pretty much a consensus, with the exception of Eric O'Roy, that if the bill had too many modifications in it or recommended changes in it, the likelihood of its getting through would be fairly small. So Willis is pushing for a fairly concise statement, just addressing some of the big issues. Probably the biggest issue, at least as far as Eric O'Roy is concerned, is the corporate financial section. And he has talked to some accountants who tell him that the GAAP approach is a bad approach. So that'll be dealt with in some detail at the next meeting, and I really don't know what's going to happen with that, because I have a sense that there's some concern about it, because it hasn't been, you know, fully digested yet by the people on the task force, but I don't know that there's any real opposition to that other than from Eric O'Roy.
Did he have an alternative?
He did not. Other than just to have general language in there indicating that virtually any approach that was used by an accountant could be used, which doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. That's the whole concept of GAAP, is that it incorporates whatever the best thinking, majority thinking is for accountants at any particular point in time. They also talked about the cushion, which Eric O'Roy is concerned about. If you'll recall, the cushion is that in order to declare a dividend, it's necessary for a corporation to have 1.25 to 1 assets to liabilities. And Eric feels that that is too tough a test for some of the village corporations to meet. Dave Wolf didn't seem to share that feeling, which is interesting, since he's going to be the one that is actually representing the village corporations for the FM. And other people generally had no comment on the cushion at all. So those appear to be the two big issues. There was some talk about incorporating some of the language from the ALI duty of care statement of corporate principles into our bill. And there may be a task force recommendation to do that, although I think that'll take some considerable drafting to make that fit in with the language that we've already got. Anyway, from this point in time, we have made some small changes. We still have the big picture issues to resolve, and plan to finish that at the December 8th meeting, at which time we probably should have another commission meeting and have the commission take a position on all of the recommended changes. I thought that I would put on the table for consideration today, having Dan Fessler review the changes that the task force recommends and paying him some amount of money. I wouldn't think it would cost very much to do that. I'm prepared to fly down to San Francisco at my own expense to meet with Dan, since he's back in teaching classes now. But I'm sure he would expect remuneration for any work that he did in reviewing these changes. So I'll throw that out for discussion purposes to see if that makes any sense.
Mr. Chairman, before we touch that, incidentally, I had occasion to meet for a couple of hours with George Cruz, the executive director of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce. The meeting was intended for a totally different subject, but I wanted to brief him, since he represented the primary opponents to the passage of the Corporations Code, what was taking place with respect to the task force and otherwise. He had some awareness that it was going to occur, but he averred that he thought the chamber would pay for a review of the bill, of the act, and preparation of recommended changes to be done by J.C. Tangent. I have no idea. I didn't know about the December 8th meeting, whether J.P. is commissioned to get it done by that time or not.
When we were discussing having a meeting, I believe it was the 19th, or the, I'm sorry, it was the, either going to be the 21st or the 22nd of November, J.P. indicated that he was on a limited budget and didn't know if he'd be able to fly back down here to Anchorage for that purpose.
For the December 8th meeting?
No, for this was, this, initially we planned to meet several days after the December 16th meeting to try and have something in concrete form for the commission today. And when the scheduling didn't work out on that, we rescheduled it for December 8th. But I don't know how much work he's going to put in that. J.P. didn't have a whole lot of comments to make at the time, and I got the impression that he hadn't spent a lot of time yet in reviewing the bill.
Well, for purposes of your placing before us for discussion the engagement of Professor, it seems to me that if there are anything other than minor technical changes, the changes recommended by the task force that are substantial and substantive, I would think that we ought to use it.
My concern is a lot of these changes are small changes. They want to add a word here or take out a word there, which I think the commission can deal with adequately. Some of the changes, however, may cause internal inconsistency problems or may be in actual conflict with other sections of the bill.
Well, he's the best situated to provide that analysis.
Right.
And I think it would be worth $200,000 that we have available for the purpose. He didn't spend anywhere near what was authorized when he did the analysis of the ALI comparison and the impact of the 1991 amendments. Seems to me there's and then we looked at it in this budget paper here, but it was much less than we had available for that work, so it seems to me that the money is there and we would be well advised to use it. And if you want a motion to that effect, I'd be glad to make it.
Well, if we can do that, as I say, I'll pay my own way down there and then just claim per diem for my expenses while I'm down there, but I'll cover the airfare.
I don't know why you should have to do that. If
well, because I can
there.
Travel on a pass anyway, Judge.
Oh, okay.
So there's no point in billing the commission for... I can travel down there on my wife's Celeste Airlines pass.
Fine. You want a motion?
I so move.
Well, before we have a motion, we probably ought to decide how much we want to commit for Dan Fessler. I wouldn't think that it would cost more than $2,000 to have him do that work.
I can imagine that it would unless there are very, very substantial changes.
Well, they're not, and I think, and again, I don't know what's going to come out of the December 8th meeting, but if it's similar to what's come out so far, there won't be any large changes. There may be a couple of policy changes which the commission won't care that much about. For example, a better way of coming up with an accounting standard, if you will, other than GAAP. But other than that, I guess what I'm really concerned with again is the internal consistency of the whole bill. Changing some language that the result of which will be immediately apparent to Dan Fessler because of his, you know, ongoing knowledge of corporate case law, which I might miss by altering a standard slightly, for example, a prudent man standard in the duty of care. And he might look at that and say, oh, this is awful, this is going to devastate the whole bill. And
I think we've agreed that we would use him, and just and if you want a $2,000 limit, I so move to amend the motion to that effect.
Okay.
John, are there any expenses that when you travel like that, there are tax expenses? I mean, it's going to cost you something.
He said he'd take per diem.
Okay, but I mean, there's, in addition to, I mean, sure, there are going to be living expenses down there, but, I mean,
well,
you know...
Well, if I claim per diem, Mary, I'll be covered.
You'll be covered?
Sure.
Okay, that's what I'm concerned about, is just to make you covered, because, I mean, it does cost a few, like, 30 or 40 bucks to get down.
All I'll need to do is rent a car, and I'll stay with Dan at his home, so...
Oh, okay. So everything, just, I just want to make sure you're covered.
Yeah, no, I'll be more than covered.
Question?
Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. Question for Mike. Do we need to have a new contract, or what's your recommendation for...
Now, was there, I assume there was an existing contract to do some earlier work?
I might have it here.
In the last fiscal year.
Yeah, there was a contract for him to review the bill, the legislation as passed, against the 1991 amendments on the Native Claims Act, against a proposed statement of principles of corporate management by the American Law Institute, and any other changes that might be necessary, and we had a contract with him to do that. Maybe I don't have it here, but it was signed and agreed, and I think it probably is broad enough to cover it.
I'm sure it is, and it's well under the $25,000 limit for a sole source contract.
So, well, question probably whether it's been closed out or not.
Right.
If it was last fiscal year and the money would have lapsed, but if it's still open for some reason or still actively pending or whatever the problem is, then we probably could just throw this into it.
Well, I could take a look at the old contract and see if we need to either have a new contract or we can amend the existing one. Okay. One or the other.
It was authorized at the June meeting, and ostensibly at least some of the cost was hopefully going to be borne by monies from the 87-88 fiscal year, and he was going to do the work before August, but I don't know whether any of that worked out or not.
As far as I know, the contract was paid from last fiscal year's funds, and he met the deadlines, and my recollection is that we provided in the contract that the work was to be completed by August, and it was.
Yeah. So that's probably doesn't need a new contract.
Fine.
Yeah, but it didn't encumber any of the 89 fiscal year funds.
It would have to now.
It would have to now, yes.
So I think it probably needs a new contract.
I'll take one.
From a timing standpoint, your meeting with the task force will be December 8th.
Yes.
And then would you propose to get with Dan shortly thereafter? And then what are we talking about as far as the commission's then next meeting on that?
Yeah. Sometime after that.
During the holiday, okay?
Well, if we can, sometime.
Well, the session begins.
Something
like that. Do you know what it is, Mike? The second or third Monday? Second Monday. Second.
Yeah, I think it's the 9th.
Yeah, it is the 9th. Sunday's the 8th.
January 9th.
Not to skip ahead, but it probably would be good to see if we could meet at some point. I'd like to see if we could meet before the end of the year.
Well, we should meet before the end of the year so we can get something in draft form for a bill.
Right.
We expect to get it introduced and have it go someplace during the first half of the next legislature.
How quickly would you go after the 8th, do you know?
It'd just be a question of Dan Fessler's availability. My calendar is fairly flexible for December, so it would depend on when he could meet with me. But I try and get out there as soon as possible.
Well, to discuss our meeting date.
I'm sorry.
I guess it's premature in this meeting to discuss the next meeting date.
Why don't we do it? Especially when everybody's here.
Well, is it possible to do it before the end of the week of the 12th?
The end of the week of the 12th? What day?
The 8th is Thursday. And then there's Monday the 12th. And if we could meet on Friday, or Thursday or Friday the 15th or 16th, is that rushing you too much?
No. No, that's fine with me.
It's okay with me.
How about Friday the 16th?
That's fine.
Friday the 16th.
I may be in trial, but if I am, I probably am going to be losing. Okay, that's fine. And I'll be here if I'm not in trial.
Okay.
That's a good day.
And that'll be here in Anchorage at the LIO, assuming I can get the room.
Okay.
And maybe we should specify the later starting time for, because to accommodate the plane coming from, well, I would be probably taking that too.
Yeah.
So it's 10 a.m.
9:30 is probably the earliest it could be.
No. Really, 9:45 or 10 would be better.
I'd set it for 10. And is it going to be helpful to go over any of the proposed changes today so that you can be thinking
about
it? I
don't think so until they're solidified.
Okay.
It's a waste of our time.
As I say, most of the changes are just small changes. And Willis will be sending out a letter asking people to prioritize.
He's going to be here on the 8th?
Yes. Barring having to close a bank or something like that. Okay, the next item on the agenda is the security interest in real property. Received a copy of an update from Teresa Bannister. Under date of October 20, 1988.
This, 20th.
You didn't get a copy of this?
I'll check, John, when I go back, but I don't think so. I don't remember this.
Yeah, I got mine on October 27th, so.
Okay, well, I should have gotten,
Why don't we go off the record and give everybody an opportunity to review this?
Just her memo?
Yeah, we're going to have to make some policy decisions.
Okay.
Should I run off some copies?
Yes. Yeah.
Let me give you a little bit of background. The first thing is that I'm sure this should be Senate Bill, Committee Substitute was Senate Bill 315 rather than 305. I don't know. I'm sorry, 515 was the bill that was the vehicle for changes that were that would have been reflected or impacted by the security interest bill. Late into the session, Senator Josephson introduced Senate Bill 515, the purpose of which was to address the issues raised in Conrad versus Counselor and Moaning versus Alaska Mutual Bank. Those issues being whether or not it was necessary to foreclose on secured property securing a deed of trust note before proceeding directly against the trustor, borrower, on a simple breach of contract action on the note. And Supreme Court in both of those cases said, yes, it's possible to proceed on the note as a breach of contract action. Or you still have your remedies of summary foreclosure with no deficiency or judicial foreclosure with a deficiency. The court went on to say that you can either even sue on the note and foreclose on the property and have what amounts to a secured judgment. There was a lot of constituent dissatisfaction with that, as well as dissatisfaction on the part of some of the senators. Almost all of the senators that were on the Senate Judiciary Committee wanted to see some changes made. I was approached, since I was down in jail working on the Corporations Code and the Recording Act, to review Senate Bill 515 for Senate Judiciary, which I did. And Terry Bannister and I went through probably four or five drafts of different committee substitutes for 515. The only real opposition came from the state of Alaska. They did not want to lose one of the arrows in its quiver, so to speak. And either based on that, or lack of time, or the fact that it was a fairly complex piece of legislation, the Senate passed out what I'll characterize as a compromise bill. The compromise bill is not very well drafted. Suffice it to say, what it purports to do is to provide that in the future, after the effective date of the act, that any note upon which the secured party or the payee drafts, there must be included specific language which is set forth in 515. The effective date on that was May 24th of this year. What's not clear from the legislation is whether or not that applies to existing notes that have not yet been foreclosed on, or secured property that's not yet been foreclosed on, or notes that have been sued on and reduced to judgment. Now, when I was working with the Senate Judiciary Committee, I took a large section right out of our security interest bill and made modifications to it. The modifications included the following. One, that there had to be an election of remedies between suing on the note or foreclosing on the property, which could be both. Another one proposed that you had to secure on the property before you could sue on the note, because that was the expectations of a lot of people anyway, that the property would be taken, and if there was a deficiency, you'd seek the personal funds of the borrower to satisfy that deficiency. Another was retrospective application pursuant to Title I. And Teresa and I did some research on that, and there was a memo by Dick, and I'm kind of whipped you today. He's been with the AG's office forever.
Okay.
No, he may be now with
Paul Bradley.
Dick Bradley. He had done some research on the retrospective application question, and there was some authority for the proposition that if there was a situation recognized by the legislature of economic dislocation, that you could, in effect, interfere with existing contractual rights to the extent of providing legislative relief from some of the harsher provisions of existing contracts. I think the Senate Judiciary Committee was a little concerned about that because they thought it might spawn some litigation, and it probably would have. It would be a question for the court to resolve that. There was also would have been specific reference in the bill to the legislature's intent to overturn the legal effect of Counselor and Moaning. Suffice it to say, again, that the net result was a bill that left most of those issues dangling up in the air. I mean, we don't really know what 515 does now, other than in terms of new notes after May 24th, 88, it's clear that you have to have specific language in there to reserve the right to sue on the note. What's not clear is what happens if you don't do that. The only reference in the statute is to the non-loss or the preservation, if you will, of existing remedies of summary foreclosure and non-judicial foreclosure. But it doesn't really provide a good basis for saying, okay, you have to take the property first, or you can sue on the note and you can still take the property. Those are all issues that are up in the air, and either will have to be solved by the legislature or by the Alaska Supreme Court when an appropriate case gets up there interpreting this. So the question is, given the ambivalence of this Senate Judiciary Committee, and I say ambivalence in the sense that they didn't utilize the draft that Terry Bannister had prepared, the one that we worked on. I don't know if that was primarily because of the state's position on all these loans that are outstanding, or because there wasn't enough time. This all happened in the last week of the legislative session to consider something with ramifications such as this would have. So I can only characterize it as ambivalence. I can't say that if the legislature doesn't want another chance to look at this, or that they would be amenable to some of the measures that are in there. What's before the commission now is what we do with our security interest bill, and whether or not we use some of the draft bill language that raises the policy issues. Again, one, overturning Councillor Monick; two, giving retrospective application to the bill; three, calling either for an election of remedies, or forcing foreclosure on the property before suit on the note can occur. So those are the tough issues, or whether we want to just disregard those and just redraft our security interest bill to make it compatible with whatever 515 now says. And I'd be happy.
I kind of doubt that we're well situated today in terms of how we prepared for this meeting to address those policy issues. I think I'd prefer to see if it's not too much of a burden on the Legislative Affairs Agency, if a draft bill that would follow the bill that we already have, but made consistent with the changes that the legislature adopted in 515, and then have that accompanied by a memo that points these particular policy issues, and that be considered at another meeting of the commission, maybe a January meeting.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I'm troubled by this particular set of policy questions anyway, as something which I feel comfortable addressing through this particular commission, just because it's it would be nice to know what general policy the legislature was inclined to adopt anyway before we stuck our necks out and made a choice.
That's why I'm suggesting that the bill be what we had previously agreed upon, as modified by the most recent expression of the legislature, and that the remaining policy issues be put to us in a memorandum form, see whether we want to deal with them or not.
Okay, well, just as a point of reference, the work draft that you have under date of 4/22/88 was the last draft bill that was submitted, not the final that came out of it. Secondly, I doubt that we're going to be able to find out what the legislature wants to do on this, because we can't even glean that from what eventually turned out to be the final of Senate Bill 515. And third, it's going to be very difficult to reconcile 515 with our current bill, because, at least in my mind, we don't know exactly what 515 does. So I don't know how we're going to, we can either avoid taking the policy position. We can just say, fine, try and incorporate 515 into the remedy section of our security interest bill, or make some specific recommendations. But the last draft bill is here in its entirety and sets forth all of these issues.
It seems to me that the type of policy issues that we're talking about are ones that I would think the constituency of some senator or representative would be up in arms about. And it would seem like the Code Commission would be better placed, and I concur with Will's comments, to assist once the determination is made of where we're going, because these are particularly, I'm not too concerned about, like, for instance, overturning the court decisions. One case is already settled. The Manning case is still around and will be around, and so there is a concern with respect to that particular provision. But I mean, there's more to this whole security interest thing than just even what we have in the proposed, in the comments of Terry Bannister, and I'm really uncomfortable proceeding without, like, for instance, if some senator came and said, we need this and we can participate, like you did, John, in the drafting and helping them get what they, that's great. But, you know, from a standpoint of the commission, I mean, yeah, I might be personally, I would like to see an election of remedies. I think that's good law, and I think that that's what Oregon does and other states do, and I think it's great law. The problem is we may be whistling in the wind. The legislature, for whatever reason, may think we don't care about this. And, I mean, Manning had its impact last year, and look what they came out with, gobbledygook. And we'd have to go a ways, in my opinion, to get anything that would be a concrete, overwhelming approach to securities interest. And all the time, there's all these cases going on in the state. I mean, we have judicial foreclosures every day happening, people getting sued on notes. I mean, we have a mess in the state. And I don't want to spend our time and energy putting our personal opinions or what we feel is good law into this when the legislature could give a diddly damn. I mean, they may not care. I don't know that. I don't know if they care or not. From the last thing they came out with, it doesn't look like they care that much. As I read that is so messed up that we'll have a good deal of court decisions on that before it's through.
I've already raised one. I've already filed.
Yeah, I mean, it's just...
I've already asserted that as a defense in a breach of contract case.
Yeah.
Because it's ambiguous. Well, let me say this. There was a lot of concern from various senators, including Senator Sturgiewski, Faith, Josephson, Kurtula, Rohde. They all talked in terms of introducing a bill to overturn, without specifying how they were going to do it, the effects of cloning and counseling.
Right.
And I hesitate to place too much emphasis on the fact that we got what we got in the final version of 515, because again, 515 wasn't even introduced until the last week of the session. We went through four or five drafts at that point in time. And probably would have gone through in this version had it not been for the state coming in and saying we have some real problems with that. So there, and of course when I testified, I said that's really a policy issue that you want to talk about.
Who was the state? Who was representing?
Well, it was the Attorney General's office.
The AG's office.
It would be Ada and everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about the state as a lender.
No.
It was the attorney in Juneau that represents the Department of Commerce, and I don't represent.
I think that Joyce James did a lot of the work on this. She's the one that
I think it was Joyce.
And what is the state of Alaska going to do about it? What is Ada going to do about it? I mean, those types of things are questions that I don't think any legislation will solve, because they're questions that are on the block right now. And
well, we have a procedural approach as far as the committee is concerned. Outlined it.
Okay. Did Do the commissioners want to see anything for the next meeting other than the Manning and Counselor cases, the present Senate Bill 515, and the Madness to Make case?
Well, if you feel that you have the time and the energy and the willingness to do even a one-page outline of the issue, that would help me to focus. Because this is not an area in which I have done anything for so many years that I'm just not up to speed. And to have a focus of the issues and a brief memorandum would be most helpful to me.
Okay. I can do that. That's only going to address the remedies portion.
That's right.
Of the security
that's
interest
right.
bill, however, because the rest of it is pretty much standard. It has been brought up today.
Already been worked over.
It's already been worked over. So the only thing that's at issue is just the remedies of the secured party section. Next item on the agenda, excuse my voice, I've got a terrible cold, is the Title II study and recommendations to the legislature. And the status of that is now we had it on the agenda the last time for determination of the hiring of a outside contractor to assist us with preparing at a minimum a recommendation to the legislature for amendment to Title II, at a maximum a draft bill, which would have done exactly that. As you'll recall, we were given a $14,000 increase in our budget just to cover the Title II study.
Mr. Chairman, I read it coming up on the plane this morning, and it is a mess.
It's terrible.
It's
absolutely terrible.
Yeah. I think we've got to try to identify, we've got to make good on the fact they gave us this money. We've got to try to identify a consultant who's capable of doing it, and it should, if were possible within the budget, include a draft bill, but it would have to be a complete rerun.
Okay, in terms of our obligation to the legislature, the $14,000 figure was arrived at by an estimate made by the Department of Transportation, which said that we can study Title II for you and tell you what's wrong with it and give you some general ideas about what needs to be changed, what should be included in a new bill, but did not include a draft bill. So
that's the limitation. I would say that we should at least do that.
That's why I say at a minimum we have to present a working paper outlining issues and identifying areas that need changing.
But basically, just the organization of it to deal with one Act of 37, another Act of 39 that have overlaps, and I'm not sure about inconsistencies, but certainly overlaps that make it impossible almost for anyone to study out what covers what.
That's right. No, Title II is worthless.
Does the chair or other committee member or commissioners have any suggestion with respect to consultants?
You said the department would do that.
I'm sorry.
Didn't you say the department would do it?
No.
Initially,
yeah,
the Senator talked about that
approach,
but backed off from it. We're
we
the
got
alternative.
It.
We got it.
We're the alternative.
Had contacted.
Yeah, I remember now.
At the Department of Transportation, and they said if we were required to do it, it would cost $14,000.
So we're back to the question of identifying a consultant that could provide us this analysis.
Correct.
Not only internally of what's covered, but also what's normal for a state to do. Because obviously we're right up against the Federal Commerce Authority, and they have no business intruding where the state doesn't have power.
I think probably if a consultant were to work on that, the consultant would not be willing to put it, you know, to put together a draft bill.
Well, that's all right.
That's fine.
The bill might end up just being a lot of repeals, too, right?
Well, that's
true. I mean, it might be predominantly repeals is what I, my thought was, just from what, you got not only the federal preemption type stuff, but outdated material that's just no longer applicable or appropriate.
And there's some real questions about the special funds and just a mess. But it seems to me it would take somebody who's not only could review the Alaska scene, but to face questions of omission in what ought to be in there. He ought to look at what some other state that has an active air program going on. Small carriers, private flying, what have you. That he can relate what we have to what modern view looks at.
Mm-hmm.
I think you might start, for example, with what state has recently revised its own treatment of this field.
Well, I know of two Anchorage attorneys that have expertise in this area, and maybe we can put our heads together and come up with a list of people that would be potential contractors. And the two I know are Paul Koval, who was involved with Wien Air in the bankruptcy and later became in-house counsel, and Dennis Maloney, who succeeded Paul Koval as in-house counsel for Wien.
What's Paul doing now? He's in private practice?
Right. He has been in private practice for years. He's been in private practice for probably the last 4 or 5 years.
Okay. Well, they might be able to identify some person in academia could do this.
Well, yes. It would be my recommendation that we stick with somebody local to do this. So that we don't get in trouble again with the outside consultant type thing.
There's a guy named Chuck Schmidt who's a sole practitioner here. He used to work in the AG's office and did a lot. He worked, I think, exclusively for the Transportation Commission, which meant that he worked a lot with regulation of air carriers.
What about delegating to the chairman if you're willing to undertake talking with each one of those people individually or fixing a meeting with all of them and asking for proposals?
I'd be pleased to do that if I can get some names, some suggestions from the members.
Well, you have three names.
About three.
You might ask them about any other names of somebody they might know. Might be somebody in Fairbanks.
Trying to think who. Perkins represents Alaska Air, at least you don't want it given to I don't know. Maybe giving it to a firm is all right, huh?
Perkins is very expensive.
It's very expensive.
Yeah, and I don't know if they do. Well, there's no point, no harm in approaching them. Seeing if they want to do it.
We don't have too many aeronautical experts, do we?
These are the kinds of little projects that a sole practitioner would
Yeah, a sole practitioner
pick
would
up
be
on
great.
Instead of a Perkins type firm.
That's right.
Paul Koval's got either three or four attorneys in his firm, and Dennis Maloney is by himself. And Chuck Smith, I guess, is by himself, too.
I think so, yeah.
He's in Anchorage.
Yeah. I know he's been doing some work that, a lot of his work that he's done in the last 3 years or so that he's been away from AG's office has had to do with Bush pilot or small.
The thrust of the what you're asking them to do would be to do what this money was commissioned for.
Mm-hmm.
A study of need and a recommended outline. From there, we would have to maybe go back to the legislature for funds for bill drafting consistent with with the results of such a study.
What do the members think about indicating an amount less than $14,000 for the study and reserving some for testimony at a future legislative hearing?
$10,000, is that reasonable?
$10,000, and then we'd have an additional $4,000 left to fly somebody down and have them meet with one or two legislative committees.
I would think it's one of the criteria, and it doesn't have to be overwhelming, but I would think that you would want to look at the particular practitioner's abilities in craft and writing, but also if they've ever had any drafting a bill experience, which they probably haven't, but because this is a very different thing, as we all know, than just practicing law. And you don't want, some people give an overgloss. This is a real particular, the particulars are important here, and maybe you could get something out of a writing sample or something like that, John, I don't know.
Well, we are on a short time leash, keep in mind.
That's true.
Because we promised something for this next legislative session.
So, somebody'd have to have the time to do it quickly.
Probably at least by the 1st of March.
Yeah. Everybody's agreed then, $10,000 for the project and hold back $4,000 for testimony. And to have a work product done by March 1 of 1989. What I would propose is that I talk with these three people, maybe a couple more, and ask them to... I don't even know, is it appropriate to ask for a proposal? Under the circumstances. I mean, we know exactly what we want to do, and the question is, can you do that for $10,000?
Are they interested in, willing?
Yeah.
Give us some judgment, some recommendation on their, your views after you've met them. We could take that up at the next meeting.
Mm-hmm.
It seems, I'm trying to remember how agencies are supposed to deal with the new, procurement code requirements and stuff. You might know a little bit about that, Mike. I don't know.
Well,
you should have something in writing to these people saying, here's what we want, are you interested, and then ask them to respond in writing. One of the things I know they look for is, if your procurement is audited, is you have to be able to show that you contacted at least three people, I guess it is. And so we probably want to have a letter to those people, here's what we want.
Well, you could meet with them first and then draft the letter and ask for a response.
A lot of times what they do is just send out the letter, because a lot of times only one of the people, they're not all going to be interested, and then if you've screened them first, then you have trouble meeting your requirement of three.
Oh.
Of those three names, for example, one or two might say, nah.
Oh.
And then you'll just have to come up with another name to send the letter to.
Are Mike in a position to update John on those procurement requirements?
Yeah, do you know any more about it than that?
Well, I'm trying to remember. There's a cutoff amount. Is it 25,000?
It used to be.
We're way under. We just have to kind of do the token gesture type approach. But
I would think if you come up with a simple letter that describes the work you want to do, so that you can have that to give to them. That would give you at least a record, and something along those lines would be preliminarily enough to do. Once you decided who you want to hire, then we could prepare a contract, and that would contain a description of the work, the amount to be expended, and the usual clauses.
Okay, I'll prepare a simple letter and send it out to those the three names and the Perkins Coie and anybody else that I can figure out that might have an interest.
I'll double check with the code, and if there's any problems, I'll...
Okay.
Is there somebody in the department, transportation, that you happen to know that might be conversant with people in the field?
Martha Mills does the DOT stuff here in Anchorage for the AG's office.
Ask her if she has any thoughts about people to whom the letter ought to go.
Right. She, I assume, will know some people that work in this area because she does the airport stuff.
Oh, she does the aviation
stuff.
Yeah. I did it at 1952, 1953, Tony Schwamm built 350 airports around the state, the territory.
Anything further on Title II? And that'll be on the agenda for the next time. I will have sent out a letter, and we'll have some input for the commission on who's responded, who's interested, and we can make a decision at the next meeting, hopefully.
I'm going to excuse myself at this point, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
I'll be available at 2.
Okay, well.
If the meeting continues on at that point, I will return.
If you can wait just a minute, let's find out if we have further business that we want to conduct this afternoon.
Well, the only thing that seems to me we have to at least address what steps we need to take on administrative procedures.
Well, I finally have some progress to report on that. I probably everybody got a copy of this letter memo that I sent around, and so that got us off of that dime asked for comments from agencies by January 15th. I've got about a half a dozen back so far. Nothing substantive, though. I mean, it's like, this looks fine. Or we're the quick ones that came back. And then I've had another half a dozen phone calls along the lines of, you know, this doesn't mean us, does it?
Couldn't mean us.
And so I've dealt with those along the lines of, well, probably does, at least that's the way we're leaning, and you know, you're going to have to make a real good case why it shouldn't, and maybe you should focus on particular provisions and that kind of stuff. So those kinds of more detailed or substantive comments haven't really come in yet, but I have had enough phone calls to indicate that we got people's attention.
Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that we probably should put this off till a meeting that takes place after that deadline. We have the assemblage of those materials that may help to define where we need to go.
So that wouldn't be the next meeting, that would be the following meeting.
It would be a meeting in January, you know, probably January or early February.
I received, as a result of being on the administrative law section, a copy of a letter from Dave Ingram. And he sent to the ad law section the proposed draft, and he made specific notes in there that no agency is immune.
Yeah.
So, but the section is made up mainly of private practitioners. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I was also contacted by Lou Adji of the Public Utilities Commission, and they'd gotten a copy of the letter. I believe they previously submitted some comment on that, but I'm not sure.
I don't remember seeing anything from the PUC.
So that may not be true. At any rate, I told him that if they had previously submitted commentary, that I'd get him a copy of that. They've got a real heavy hearing schedule for the next.
It should have been included. You know, the plan was that it was to be included, and I saw the pile of the agency comments that Lynn Barnes had, you know, in your office, and so.
Well,
unless theirs fell through the cracks, they would have gotten back with my...
Yeah, well, the assumption is that they didn't prepare comments because they didn't get anything with your cover letter.
I think we have enough to chew on in other business that shouldn't be taken up before then. And we can kind of map where we're going to go with it.
The APA?
Yeah. In late January or early February. With an overall look to the possibility of maybe getting something introduced before the session, and the first session is over, so it could be considered substantively in the second session.
Okay, well, I've got that down for the agenda, either in the January or the February meeting, depending on how much comment we get in. Peter, could you follow up with Randall and see what his thoughts are for meeting with us in off licensing meeting, or having a designee or somebody else. Anything else? We've pretty much gone through the agenda. Well, then I don't really see any need to run this afternoon.
Good. Then I won't return it to.
Good. Okay.
Have a nice day.
You too, Will.
Thank you.
Okay, we have an ex.
Observe where I took my overshoes off, or did I wear them?
There's some right here, Will.
So the next meeting is going to start at 10 a.m. on Friday, the 16th of December.
Okay.
And the topics are corporations.
Corporations code, security interest bill,
Title II.
Title II will be on the agenda.
Okay, not awkward.
Well, some report on it.
Yeah.
Well,
some report on it.
I guess a status report on that, huh?
Okay.
We need to do something on our licensing because it's just
true.
Sitting there.
Languishing.
Yeah. Okay.
Who's the, didn't there, isn't there a switch in your office of who's going to do off licensing, drafting?
Well, George was doing it.
And did that change?
I think it might have, yeah. I think Terry Lauderback's done it.
Yeah, okay.
There was some changing.
And when do you guys, are you now in the busy, I mean, you're starting to get the bills after the election?
Yeah, from here on in, it gets pretty crazy. So, sooner the better.
We're not going to get much of Terry's time probably until maybe if there's a lull after the first month of the session or something like that.
It's more difficult.
Is she on vacation now or is she around?
Terry Lauderback?
Yeah.
She's in town until, I think, Wednesday.
Oh, so she's coming. I'm getting ready for vacation.
Well, she's getting ready to take a trip. I'm not sure if it's a vacation or a business trip.
Okay,
I circulated the latest copy of the budget document that I've received. Does everybody have a chance to look at that?
Yeah.
Okay. That will constitute the
financial report.
I know we had some discussion, but did we take action on... you were going to contact Senator Sturzluski about our continuation, the sunset issue?
Yes.
And... I suppose it's not really appropriate for us to do much reminding of the legislative council that, you know, by the way, we need you to appoint legislative members of this body. Or, I mean, should we do that in some informal way?
Betty Farrington is still the chair of that until January.
I guess until after the session starts, and then then it's going to be somebody in the House.
Mike Davis.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Is he elected?
Yeah, he was safe. It's Boyer that
Boyer.
Had the
Mark Boyer. And he was ahead last time.
Yeah,
by barely. Finkelstein was only up by two.
Three.
They corrected it. To three.
Oh, it's three now? Oh.
Yeah, they said that it was always three, but the press had gotten it.
Oh, okay.
Everyone counts.
That one, everyone does count.
Yeah.
Are we still on the record?
We are.
Okay. Are we pretty much done with our, should I move to adjourn?
Unless there's something else that the commission wishes to take up at this time.
No.
I think we're ready to adjourn. We stand adjourned until 10 a.m. on December 16th. Of this year in Anchorage. Good.
I was going to say.